All right, I'm going to go ahead and call today's meeting of the Faculty Senate to order on Wednesday, October 29th. I have 3 p.m. Pat, can you verify that we have a quorum?
We do have a quorum.
Great. So our first order of business is to adopt the agenda for today's meeting. Could I have a motion to adopt the agenda? Atkins a first and a second. Thank you, Felicia. All in favor of adopting the agenda as in front of you, please say aye. Aye. Opposed? All right, agenda is approved. Next up is a motion to approve the October 1st, 2025 minutes. Can I have a motion to approve the minutes? Thank you, Scott. A second. A second. Thank you. I'll give it to George Slotsby. All right. Any edits, comments, updates? All right. Seeing or hearing none, all in favor of approving the minutes from October 1st, please say aye. Aye. Opposed? Abstain. All right. Minutes are approved. Pat, is there any public comment today?
No public comment today.
All right. So that brings us to the Faculty Senate President's announcements. I have two. The first is about in our first meeting, I mentioned wanting to do some leadership development around shared governance here at NIU. And so one of my goals is to cultivate and grow a pipeline of faculty leaders in the space of shared governance. And this is not to suggest that we don't have leaders already in place, but my goal is to help encourage folks who maybe have not yet raised their hand or are wondering about what it could look like to make more informed decisions or get involved in shared governance in different ways. I also want to provide some professional development in that space and ultimately help demystify what shared governance leadership looks like so folks can make informed and intentional decisions about pursuing or not pursuing leadership opportunities. Pat has helped me identify a series of dates, so I'll be sharing those in the meeting summary. They'll be starting in November and running through the end of the academic year. Once a month is the goal here, and we'll figure out modality as it makes sense. The first of the three sessions, I have the topics for the first three sessions, and the last ones will kind of hopefully emerge organically. The first one is going to be a deeper dive into what the role of the Faculty Senate President, University Council Chair is, what the Vice Presidential role could be, what the chairs of various committees, what those responsibilities are, just to help demystify the positions. And when people ask you, hey, would you be willing to serve in these capacities, you have a sense of what that means. The second one is going to be a deeper dive into how Faculty Senate and University Council and the committees intersect and work with campus and try to enact change or enact improvements on campus. And then the third meeting will be kind of a bring a topic to the table, and we'll workshop it and identify an action plan against it within those principles to kind of get a hands-on experience of what that could look like to affect change on different topics. And so I will be sharing this in the meeting summary, and I do invite you or you yourself or to tap somebody on the shoulder to attend who might be interested. The goal is, while there will be a curriculum for each one of the sessions or a goal, it's also to build community amongst ourselves and to try to help each other get to know each other in different ways and identify folks who might want to take on leadership roles or just share ideas and collaborate. There'd be no requirement to lead or serve in any way by participating, so don't feel obligated by coming to those. If anybody would like to participate, there'll be an opportunity to sign up. The second set of announcements has to do with two efforts that I'm going to be hopefully rolling out this spring that are connected in some way, but it would be great to I plan to help facilitate and lead these, but I would welcome collaboration and contribution from you all or others on campus. The first is a continuation of what we did in the spring, where I met with our newest NIU faculty, where I learned from them and listened to them about their experiences. These are people who are hired at or currently at the assistant professor or hired in the last 3 years to understand what the fresh eyes view of campus and opportunities to provide additional supports or bring people together around topics. So I'm going to redo those listening sessions. And if anybody wants to participate, again, I welcome and encourage participation in facilitating those conversations with our newest NIU faculty. The second effort is leveraging what we learned in that first go round with our newest NIU faculty, using those insights to provide opportunities for all faculty across campus of any category to participate. And we'll be holding intentional sessions on a number of identified areas that were flagged for increased learning, support, and community building around. The topics that we have been identified by our newest NAU faculty, but again, the sessions will be open to all. Those topics that I'm currently planning around are supports for faculty members who are participating in community engaged projects or work or teaching. A second session will be around connecting faculty to resources and approaches to improve scholarly and artistic success in the early career. And the third topic that I'm organizing around is how to approach pedagogical and curricular improvements. And so those are three sessions that I'll be holding out that have been identified by our newest NAU faculty, but will be open to all. So all these efforts are informed by faculty and through conversations that I've had, but I would really welcome participation and collaboration from faculty senators or from others on campus to make these sessions as impactful and important as possible. I'm already working with various units or divisions to enact these sessions, but I do welcome your participation. There'll be an opportunity to identify yourself or another person in the meeting summary. So those are my two announcements, and I will welcome up Provost Elish Piper to share the provost announcements.
Thanks. Good afternoon, everyone. I just have three quick announcements. Want to make sure that we get commencements on people's calendars. We know that our students and their families love to see their favorite professors and staff members at commencement. So hopefully you'll be able to join us for one of the commencement ceremonies in December. Our graduate ceremony is on Saturday, December 13th at 2 p.m. And invitations should have gone out recently, so that's probably in your inbox. And then undergraduate, we have two ceremonies on Sunday, December 14th. At 10 a.m., we have the first one, which is the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences, the College of Engineering and Engineering Technology, and the College of Visual and Performing Arts. That'll be at 10 a.m. And then at 2 p.m., we have our College of Ed, College of Business, and College of Health and Human Science undergraduate ceremony. So hopefully you'll be able to join us for one or more of those commencement ceremonies. Also, you probably are all aware that registration for students begins November 3rd and continues for different groups of students, leading to open enrollment on November 13th. In your classes, encourage your students, if they haven't met with their advisors, to do so, so that we make sure that the students have the information that they need and they can go ahead and get re-enrolled for the spring semester. Also, International Education Week will be the week of November 17th through the 21st. There'll be a variety of activities going on, but I really wanted to remind you about nominations. So nominations for awards for the department that's engaged in international work, for international educator, for a staff member who supports international efforts, and also two student awards related to international education will be given. And those nominations are open through Friday. So if you have someone in mind or a department in mind, I encourage you to go ahead and make those nominations so that we can ensure that we are able to give those awards to some of our very deserving colleagues. So that basically concludes my announcements.
Well, thank you. All right, so that brings us to the items for Faculty Senate consideration. We have two of them, and the first one that we have is 2026 goal planning, and I invite up President Lisa Freeman to lead us through that.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for being here, and thank you for inviting me so that I can have you help inform part of our 2026 goals for the university. I hope everybody received the email on Monday that gave a brief overview of the university's goal setting process. It's something we've been doing since 2017. And it's what we do kind of instead of strategic planning, where you make a big document that sits on a shelf. We set annual and multi-year goals on an annual basis. We revisit our progress to those goals and revise our plans as needed. What I'm going to do today is just remind you of that process and that specifically the timeline for this year. The themes that we use to set the goals, these are themes that came from our mission, vision, values, and strategic action planning framework. And then I'm going to throw up some discussion questions where I really want you to be able to converse at your tables and then share feedback with me a little bit in this forum, but also we're going to have a QR code up there so that you can share feedback in a more thoughtful fashion. And of course, my door is open and you can call or email me to have a more prolonged discussion. So we've started some summarizing progress on last year's goals really over the summer, but then more intentionally in the September to October range. That goes on me with my direct reports as part of the evaluation and planning process that takes place over the summer, but then we engage more with each other and with the trustees through September and October. And then, October and November, we'll start really thinking about what are the 2026 goals going to look like. And that's when I seek feedback from our advisory groups and our shared governance groups. And this year, we're fortunate that the timeline really allows me to come to shared leadership and shared governance groups with the goals not formed. To have very rich discussion that can then be reflected in the goals. And so I spoke with the Provost and Dean's Roundtable this morning. I'm here today. We'll be at University Council next week with the University Advisory Committee to the Board on November 6th, the monthly leadership meeting on November 18th, and then ultimately the goals and the progress summary on last year's goals will be posted on December 8th for the December 11th board meeting. Now, it is not the same PowerPoint nor the same discussion questions that go to each of these groups. For one thing, as time goes on and feedback is incorporated, the goals evolve. The jello becomes more solidified, so to speak. But also, each of these groups has a different role in our shared governance structure. And so the questions that we engage with most deeply with each group sort of depends on their role in the university and their investment in different aspects of the goals. So spoiler alert here, what we're talking about today is going to be very different than what we talk about at University Council. University Council, which is really the representative voice for faculty, staff, and students, will be discussing some goals under theme one that include a transportation / parking initiative that I'd like to see move forward in the plans for 2026. That's not to say we'll be putting something up and saying yay or nay, but saying how would we like to move forward with really contemplating doing things differently, more sustainably, just starting over. So I know parking has come up in this group before, and so I just wanted to give a little spoiler alert there. So here are the six core themes for our university goals, and I don't think you need me to read them to you, but these are the goals that we talk about every year. With all of the budget activity and budget updates that the goals have focused on, particularly last year. You're going to see another update relevant to goal six today, so I'm going to spend no time on that. And because this is a really exceptional year in terms of our operating environment, the political environment at the state and national level in which we're operating, I do want to spend a little time talking about what I would like others to see in the goals document. And part of that will be kind of my thoughts on the messages I'd like to send, what I would like people to understand about our university. And then a lot of that will be you brainstorming about the discussion questions. So I think our goals do the things that are up here to some extent every year. But I don't think there's ever been a more important time to make it very clear that our university goals reflect our values and uphold principles on which we will not compromise. And that includes access, equity, inclusion. It includes academic freedom, academic excellence, institutional independence, things which we know have been under fire and in the news. I think it's also important that the goals acknowledge our current challenges. During COVID, we were not shy about mentioning the pandemic in the goals. And I think here we really need to be forthright in acknowledging that there is a crisis of public confidence in higher education, that we're living in a time of great polarization and political interference, and that federal and state disinvestment in higher education and really federal disinvestment in our state have led to financial challenges that have a cascading effect that require us to be on top of them. And then I think as we look at the goals, I think it's really important that we not only be consistent with our core values and responsive to current challenges, but that we be constructive. And when I say constructive, I think this is a moment when we need to recognize that we don't compromise on some things, but we are dedicated to continuous improvement. We shouldn't portray ourselves entirely as defensive when we can be constructive. We don't want to appear as capitulating to pressure externally that asks us to compromise on our goals. And yet, at the same time, I don't think we can be afraid to do things that we know will be better for the university for fear that somebody will say, "You're capitulating." Because honestly, in this world, whatever you do, someone is going to complain. And we just need to focus on doing what's right for our students, what's right for the university's mission, and focus on the impact that we're having. So, these are the three questions I'm going to ask you to talk about at your table. But I want to kind of tell you where we're coming from with each of these questions before I turn you loose to do the work. So the first question is about simultaneously, how do we both strengthen and elevate the important work we do to prepare students for civic engagement and citizenship, while also demonstrating that we understand it's important to be able to talk about how an NIU degree leads to career success and economic mobility? Because both of those things are important to our students and to their families. Both of those things are important to society. Second, and this is one where I really need to hear faculty voices, what are the specific resources or strategies that our faculty members need to help students engage across differences, discern fact from fiction, and collaborate effectively? And what I'm really asking is, in the classroom, what is making you hold back? What can we do to make you less afraid to have students challenge ideas and norms? What kind of support can the university give you? I can tell you for sure that we entirely uphold your academic freedom. We have a statement to that effect. And I can tell you right here that if one of our faculty were challenged in the classroom for doing their job and teaching an idea that was unpopular in an appropriate way, we would back you 100%. Absolutely. But other than that, I'm sure there are things that would make it easier for you to do those types of classroom activities, maybe less fearful, maybe just less prepared. Or more prepared. And so I want to hear about those things, because I think, again, we want to show the community around us, we want to show the society around us, we are good at preparing students for the lives that they go to after this. And it is, in fact, about career preparation, but it is also, in fact, about civic preparedness. And part of civic preparedness happens in the classroom when students' ideas are challenged and they learn to talk to other people with mutual respect about things that all reasonable people don't agree on. And then third, given the current funding realities, and here I'm really talking about what's happening at the federal level in terms of funds that we've counted on for a long time to fund important faculty work in humanities, social sciences, and natural sciences. How can we better encourage our faculty, support them, and then most importantly, sustain forward-looking, inclusive, and collaborative work across all three pillars of our mission, teaching and learning, research, artistry, outreach, and engagement. I know that Dr. Makarsky was in here to talk about the Husky Frontier. I feel like the Research and Innovation Partnerships Division is working hard to help faculty identify opportunities for alternative funding, but I think that there may be things that are simple that we're overlooking that your voices may share with us and help us do a better job there. So those are the three questions I want you to talk about at your tables. We're going to give like 5 minutes, is that? And if anybody has questions, why don't you start working, and if you raise your hand, and because there's something you need me to clarify, I'll just walk over to the table, and then Ben and Pat will tell you when time's up. How's that?
Yeah, that sounds good. I'm just going to, in case people want to take notes right in the wrong way. If you want to pull up the QR code, you'll be brought straight to a survey, Qualtrics survey, anonymous, all that good stuff, where you can enter your table's comments on or use the link. It'll take you there as well. You can do it during the conversation afterwards, and you can also, I'll share the link again afterwards if you have some ideas you want to take back and collect in this manner. But I'll pull back up the questions, and then we'll take about 5 minutes to talk at our tables, and then hopefully the conversation will continue after this as well.
Large, like we are, maybe to the first person.
All right, I don't want to stop the conversation. As I was telling President Freeman, I'm assuming it's all on topic. But what we will do, Pat, if you can just advance to the next one. This is the QR code again. I hope this conversation sticks in your head as you leave the meeting or throughout the meeting while you're supposed to be listening to the budget updates. But what I would really encourage you to do is to continue thinking about this, going back to those that you represent and posing this question, maybe having a virtual meeting or just an email to ask for feedback so that we can continue to represent all the faculty voices, staff and student voices on campus in these questions so we can help inform the university goals for the upcoming calendar year. What we will have, if anybody has one or two like pressing questions or just topics they'd like to elevate or observations they had, I'll invite that up for a couple minutes here and then we'll transition on. But I just want to make sure folks have a chance if they want to ask a question directly of President Freeman or a comment related to the university goals.
Yeah, this works and I can reach it. One of the most cost-effective things that would be a huge benefit to all of the faculty who are teaching courses across all of the different units in the university would be if we could get an increased number of teaching assistants, because my department, and I can only speak for the details of my department, is suffering greatly because many of the times faculty cannot get a teaching assistant. We do a lot of lab-heavy teaching classes, and lab experiences are something that our students benefit from greatly, and they're very different from lecture experiences. And it seems that if we are crunched for budget monies, more teaching assistants cost a relatively much smaller amount than anything else. And yet they seem to be the ones that are being reduced to the greatest amount, and like to do something to reverse that trend if we can.
Thank you for sharing that.
I just wanted to share from our table, we just felt like actually more time to discuss with each other would have been beneficial, because the 5 minutes felt like we just scratched the surface. So that's our feedback.
Sorry, that was my guidance. Because I mean, honestly, I do think we could stay here for an hour having this engaged conversation, and perhaps in future iterations we can, or we can even find ways to set up sessions to do that in the next week or so where we can come back together intentionally around this as faculty senators in compliance with OMA, finding ways to have smaller groups come together to have those conversations. I'd be happy to figure out how to facilitate that, because I agree there's nothing better than talking with your colleagues about complex questions for solutions. But
and I will just say that Ben shared something from the table up front with me about trying to integrate the number two of the questions, not only with what's going on in the world and the readings, but also with what happens outside the classroom. And I will say that in my mind, as we move forward, and maybe we can bring this up even again at UC, certainly in one of the other meetings, is we have student affairs doing a lot of co-curricular work about conversations across differences. We have faculty in classrooms. Those experiences are different in terms of their impact and their nature for students. And there was a paper I read during COVID, George Floyd times, and I never wrote down the reference, and now I can't find it anywhere. So you'll have to trust me that this was a valid peer-reviewed conclusion, but what the paper said was, when students come into a classroom with a particular political bent, and in the classroom they engage in meaningful debate and taking one or two sides, you know, taking a side of the issue that isn't theirs, and they're coached by a faculty member in some type of foundational framework, they inevitably have more empathy for the other side, and their own political leaning sort of moves away from where they started towards the other side. And the opposite happens when they have an experience in a student affairs setting. They tend to come in and they tend to move further to the pole that they were closer to begin with. And if you think about that, you can kind of see how that would happen. I think there's also really an important place for both of those types of spaces and experiences on campus. But what I want to make sure is that we're giving our students all of those types of experiences, because that's what's going to prepare them to be the leaders that they need to be. And that's what's going to give us the best narratives to show how we contribute to society. So, Emily, I really appreciate that. And again, anything the president's office can do to facilitate more conversation on this as we develop the goals, I really look forward to that. Thank you again for the invitation and for your time.
Thank you. All right, so that brings us to our next item for consideration, which is a budget update. We have Provost Elish Piper and CFO Middlemist to lead us through the presentation.
All right, there we are. Looks like I can advance this myself. Or not? There it goes. We want to provide a little context. You may have seen that recently Governor Pritzker sent out an executive order requiring all of the state agencies to hold back 4% of their budgets to sort of be prepared to weather the storm of what's happening at the federal level and the impact at the state level. Well, obviously our university is not a state agency, but that really is a signal that the state is concerned about the budget situation and some of the things coming from the federal government that will negatively impact Illinois' budget. And so another piece of this is that in the spring, informed that the universities would be receiving a 3% increase in their state appropriations. And then as time passed, we found out that we were going to get a 1% increase with 2% at the discretion of the governor. We were unable to find out what at the discretion of the governor meant, if there was going to be a proposal process or particular priorities or particular metrics that would be used. Well, now we're hearing that the 2% is highly unlikely to come, that we really should not be expecting that, because as the state is dealing with the impact of things like Medicaid and different benefits like SNAP benefits and other federal programs, that the state will be left in a situation to either fill in the gaps or to figure out what they can cover and how to cover. And so I wanted to share that context, because when we planned our budget, we anticipated a 3% increase in our state appropriation. And now that we are only guaranteed of a 1% increase, that really requires us to be highly strategic in the current budget year, but also to take into consideration that continued careful planning and careful alignment of resources with priorities as we begin doing budget planning for next fiscal year. So I wanted to just provide that broad context before we give you some updates on what's happening here at NIU, specifically with our budget process.
So I want to just real quick talk about fiscal year 26 and some things that we're doing to put into context what the percentages mean. The 2% reduction is about $2 million. So we're expecting to see $2 million less from the state in terms of our total budget. One of the things that we've done, we've worked really hard at being able to project out the budget, forecast where we think we're going to land. And we've done that at the university level. We've been working on that tool to get it down to the divisional level. And so we have done that. We've developed that and distributed that out to the vice presidents for them to be able to use. We're also holding quarterly meetings with all the divisions, all the vice presidents, to go over their budgets to see if where we think their revenues are, they're tracking on those revenues. If we think where their expenses are, they're tracking on their expenses. And the way we've built that is we're using historic information. So we're using how divisions have been spending in prior years. Same for the revenues, how they've earned in prior years, but then also looking at things like encumbrances. And so it's a little complicated, but so far it has been very good. We've had about half of our meetings for the first quarter this last couple of weeks, and we'll have the rest of them in the next week or so to be able to make sure that we stay on track. Because for this year, it's really, really important that we have a balanced budget.
I just want to provide a little context on these meetings. I've had the opportunity to sit in on most of these meetings, and they've really been focused not just on looking at the numbers, but looking at the strategy
figuring out what opportunities for efficiencies, figuring out what's working, what's not working, having an opportunity to have fresh eyes or different eyes, looking at divisional budgets and strategies to provide input to make sure that we're giving the support and the opportunities for each division to really think most carefully and most critically about what makes sense for their division. So they've been really helpful, I think, in foregrounding more of that strategic work, in addition to obviously checking the numbers and looking at the budget data itself. That the strategy piece, I think, has been a really helpful one.
Thank you, Lori. The other thing that we try and do is to really engage, because it's easy from our seats to think what numbers look like, but to really engage the divisions, their vice presidents, the associate vice presidents, the leadership, but also their business managers to really understand from their perspective where the numbers are. And then we're going to use this to kind of transition. So for fiscal year 27, we'll talk about it in a second with the timeline, but historically we've started our budget process in the spring. So we started it in March, sometimes as late as April, and that doesn't really allow you very much time to actually develop a strategic budget. You're really reacting to very small information and not being, to Lori's point, very strategic. And so we are hoping to launch the budget process. We're planning to launch the budget process next week, so November the 3rd. What we're also trying to do is to build it out. So historically, for most organizations, NIU is no different, we tend to look at budgets in an incremental fashion. By that, what I mean is we look at the change in what we think is going to happen financially. So if we think we're going to have 2% more revenues, then we look at only that 2% to budget, because that's easy. What we're really trying to do is to look at the university as a whole. Where is it that we allocate budget? How do we spend it? Where do we spend it? All of those things, so we can really be strategic with our limited resources. So with that, what we're doing this in stages. First stage is to really identify the core functions of all the divisions, things that people do to really get an deeper understanding of not just the cost of the core functions, but what they deliver in terms of services to students or compliance with rules. And that kind of leads into the second bullet, which is really using those core functions then, digging into where is the effectiveness of these things, how much is our return on this. And I want to emphasize that when I talk about return, I'm a finance person, so return oftentimes means return on investment. But I think that in a university setting, there's a lot more in terms of how we serve our community. And so it's not always that we're looking at dollars. And then we'll summarize all of that information in the spring to really begin to develop our budget strategies. Lori, I don't know if you wanted to add anything. Okay. So for our timeline, I said we're launching the guidance next week, so about 6 months earlier than what we have before. We have the Board of Trustees meeting in mid-November. That's about the time we'll be finalizing the fiscal year 25 numbers, and so hope to have that. We'll have that available at the Board of Trustees and to the campus after that. We're going to ask all the divisions to really sit down and bring back their core functions, and I want to spend a second on the core functions. We've really struggled with what does that mean? And so we're trying to leave it a little undefined so people can manage that themselves. But we've asked all the divisions or the leadership to come back with us with what they think the core functions are for their units, so we can help assess that. And we've asked them to also prioritize end of November. And then we'll really begin the work at the divisions, engaging governance, working across campus December, January, February, in terms of building out what we think are the core functions, what we think we need to continue to deliver the quality services that we do. And then in March, begin to have meetings with all the divisions to understand their budget packages. April, May, really begin setting the budget. So we've given ourselves a much longer runway, hopefully to be a lot more thoughtful in how we deploy our budgets. So I'm going to let Lori talk core functions.
So I want to talk a little bit about core functions, because the question is how high level, how specific should they be? So just today I had the opportunity with the deans to start talking about core functions in academic affairs. And in thinking about core functions in academic affairs, we were looking at things like obviously instruction as a core function. Does it make sense to look at instruction together? Should it be broken apart into things like general education and undergraduate and graduate? Advisement, should advisement be a separate core function, or is advisement better rolled up into student academic support, which would include things like tutoring and the Disability Resource Center and those sorts of things? And so in thinking about those core functions, trying to make sure that we're really capturing what we do, but capturing it at a level that makes sense. The reason I'm saying that in academic affairs is at the division level, we want the colleges and also the other units in academic affairs to be able to nest under those core functions, to see themselves, but not necessarily to have it be so granular that it becomes unwieldy. So that's really the process that we're looking at right now in that core function exercise. And I think that similar things are happening in other divisions as well. Questions like, you know, should we list the names of programs? I said, well, if we did that in academic affairs, we would have well over 100 different degree programs. That probably doesn't serve us well in thinking about a core function. Are there different ways we can roll that up to really focus more on the activities that we do? Oftentimes we hear about activity-based budgeting, you know, where it's really aligned with the key activities, the key things that you do. And so that's really the approach that we're trying to take as we figure out what those core functions are. A good thing that will happen, as George mentioned, we'll be able to share a draft and then get feedback in the process to make sure that the core functions make sense, not only to the individual division, but also to George and myself and others, President Freeman, others who are going to be looking at the university level to make sure the pieces and parts fit together in a way that makes sense. So as we think about those core functions, another piece is partnerships. I'm going to use the example of a conversation I had with the deans today. We talked a lot about partnerships, both internal and external. So some of our core functions require us to collaborate with other units on campus. So for example, we talked about research, scholarship, and artistry is a core function in academic affairs because of the vital role that faculty play. But we know we don't own that by ourselves, that we do that in collaboration with the Division of Research and Innovation Partnerships. We also talked a lot about in some of the areas related to like academic quality, that we partner closely with external partners. For example, if we're doing placements or clinical experiences, or we're doing internships, that's a critical part of a degree program. How do we make sure that in those core functions, we're thinking also about the vital role that some of those external partners play? For example, those external partners might be involved in research. Those external partners might be involved in we deliver programs for those external partners, or those external partners might play a role on our advisory committees. And so thinking about that role of partnership as well, because while the university is divided into divisions, there oftentimes is overlap, and there certainly should be collaboration across divisions. So figuring out what those separations are is another part of the process that we're engaged in discussing. And then we also need to really think about strategically making sure that those core functions are the things that we need to align our university resources with. They're the most essential, most important, most enduring things that we do. And through this process, we want to make sure that those things are being appropriately resourced because they are core functions. So I'm going to go back and give you an example about advisement again. So one argument that I made, why I said maybe advisement should be a separate core function, is that there are expenses associated with advising. That, you know, we pride ourselves on having professional advisors that serve many of our programs. We also know that our first-year advising model has been an important tool to support our students' first-year success and transition into being retained into the second year. We also know that in many programs, faculty play a role in advisement. It's part of their load. It's part of their official faculty work. And so my argument in thinking about wanting to align our resources with a core function is that advisement is central to student success. It's central to the operation of our academic programs. And so it seemed like it made sense to me that perhaps it should be its own separate core function. So I shared that just to give you an idea of that sense of, you know, we want to make sure that those core functions are directly aligned with the resources at the university. So many of our resources in academic affairs are people. And so making sure that we're accounting for that as we're thinking about the core functions. And so hopefully that example gives you a sense of the kind of strategic thinking that we're really, really encouraging the divisions to go through, because we have this elongated time frame to do drafts and get feedback and get more input and do revisions so that we can really use the process to become much more strategic about our budget. And George advanced the slide. I thought this was his slide. When we think about our strategic alignment with Mission Fit, if you look at these items up here, these are familiar to you. You probably recognize these from our strategic action planning framework. You probably also recognize these in relationship to the university goal framework that President Freeman was just talking about. As you look at these should not be a surprise to you, because these are really the why behind the university. Why does the university exist? Why does the university matter? These are the things that are most important to us as an institution of higher education. So in this process, making sure that we have strategic alignment to these areas and making sure that the things that we're doing, the things that we're investing our resources in, make sense in terms of the university and these core areas of the mission.
The only thing I'd add is that typically when we go through the budgeting exercise, we haven't done that, right? We've just gone through an exercise of figuring out how we allocate out money. We really want to tie it to the mission, vision and values of the university. So in section three of our budget process, one, we're going to really dig into the core impact. So the core functions, what is the impact that they have? And we will look at things that that are quantitative. We're going to look at the number of students that are served. We're going to look at graduation, retention. We'll also look at things around compliance. Our university isn't a lot different, but we have a lot of things that we say are compliance. That may not actually be as compliant as we think they are. So we're going to really ask people to think through that as they're putting that forward with us. The other thing I think I hope is a lot different with this process is, although we do want to have things that we can measure, we want to be able to identify that, there are a lot of things that universities do that are not quantitative in nature, that they're qualitative, that they meet other parts of our mission, other parts of our service that we are as a university. And so I want to give this that space to be able to allow divisions and areas to talk about how it is that they're also serving our community, serving our students. And so there will be a qualitative component with the budget process. And then kind of the last part of the budget process for fiscal year 27 is really bringing all of that together in a summary so that we can have it as a digestible, understand what it is that's coming forward to be able to share with the community, but also to be able to make decisions. And so that's the big part of it. There's one other section, and I think we talked about it earlier too, is really a lot of times we do things at universities and organizations with an idea that we're going to have some outcome, but then after we've invested in that thing or launched that thing, whatever it is, we forget about it. And so really want to engage this process to be able to come back and say, with whatever it is that you're trying to accomplish with this, with the limited resources that we have, are we actually accomplishing this? And is there space that we need to come back and talk about tweaking, rejigger the finances, whatever it is. And so really want to make sure that we don't just forget about as we do the budget, put it on a shelf and walk away from it. And then that's the, you know, if there's any questions, want to always talk about, we have at www.niu.edu/budget is a wealth of information. So it has all the prior fiscal year data. It has the current fiscal year's data. So fiscal year 26, we've just uploaded that to the website. You can see where our revenues come from. You can see how the expenses are allocated out by category, but also by division and by college. And so I would encourage you to go to this website. It has a lot of information. It has communications. And if you ever have any questions, Lori and I are always available to answer those questions. And we're also available to answer questions now.
Hi, James Burt from the College of Business. Thank you for presenting this. I noticed you went through the section four, I think, really quickly, and I just wanted to make sure I didn't misunderstand something that was up there. Provide decision level personnel summary. I didn't hear you mention talking about that. I just wonder what that is.
Sure. One of the things, that's a great question, and I'm an accountant by training, so I do tend to talk fast and talk numbers, right? One of the things we want to do is to be able to populate out where our people are, where personnel are. So we'll have prior fiscal years, here's the number of FTE that we've had in, and I'm just using my area, the accounting department. Here's FTE fiscal year 25, here's FTE fiscal year 26. What are we anticipating for fiscal year 27, the number of personnel? And what are the costs associated with that? The number one expense of the university is people, as it should be.
Hi, I'm Alicia Finch from the Department of Philosophy, and you said something about looking at returns, and you said, oh, that isn't always financial. Sometimes it's something else. And I was wondering if you could give some specific examples of other things, because I tend to think that a lot of what we do here, maybe most of what we do here, isn't something that's quantifiable. And so I don't know how it would fit in to the budget sheet or whatever. So I'm just wondering if you could say a little bit more about how you're understanding return.
So I think that's a great question. So from my lens, from my seat, return's always on investment, right? If I invest $1,000, what do I get out of that $1,000? I think that then you can look at that. So I'm going to expand on that for a second. So if I invest $1,000, let's say in admissions to hire more counselors, or admissions advisors. Did we see a return? Did we see more students coming into the university? That's one way that's quantifiable, mm-hmm. right? If we invest in a program that has high retention and expand their services out to the community, did we see larger numbers of retention for students in that program? That's another quantifiable one. Qualitative is a little bit trickier, right? Mm-hmm. And so it may be something where we have a particular value, and maybe it is community service to DeKalb, and we want to have a program where students can go out and engage in that community and deliver whatever it is that they're delivering. That's not always as quantifiable, but it is a really important engagement with our local community, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And Lori is standing here like she really wants to add.
Good, okay.
For example, if we're looking like at student success programs, sometimes it's the narratives that students explain to us. You know, this really made a difference for me, or participating in this really allowed me to learn that. And we might not be able to quantify those things. So sometimes the qualitative data might be descriptive, or it might be narrative data that lets us know things matter, or that we've gotten feedback that things contribute to student success, for example. And so what we really need to do a better job of is being able to document the outcomes in a variety of ways so that we can tell the story, so that we can make sure that the things that are working, the things that are making a difference, the things, for example, that are supporting student success, we can ensure that we can invest in those things and continue doing them. And so in the past, our budget process didn't include that element. And I think it's going to be challenging. Like anything, the first year, you know, you're going to be figuring it out. The second year, you're going to figure more of it out. In my experience, usually by year three, you got it figured out pretty effectively. But we need to be thinking about the things that we're doing. How do we know that they matter? Are we doing surveys of students? Are we collecting narrative feedback? Are we collecting case studies? Are we asking students to be part of a focus group? Are we calculating other ways of documenting the impact of some of these things? And so part of the reason we also need to do that is not just to figure out how to do that within our budget, but you're probably aware that the university is in a comprehensive fundraising campaign right now. And one of the things that we need to do a better job of is talking about the things that matter that might be fundable, that might be of interest to donors or to foundations or to other philanthropic groups that might be interested in investing in some of these initiatives that might help students build a sense of belonging or help students build a sense of self-efficacy that allows them to be successful in their classes. Or as George said, the community engaged work, being able to tell that story of the impact not only on students, but on community partners. And so I think that that metrics piece is really an opportunity for us to be able to document our work in ways that will not only help us in this budget process, but could also help us to find other types of funding to support some of the things that we want to do and that we need to do. But when resources are tight, being able to tell that story to external groups might be a way to help expand the funding that we have available.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, Mark Van Wienen, representing the Department of English. And as an English major, I get to ask the really dumb question about finance because I don't know anything about it. But my dumb question about finance, I call it finance, university finance for English majors, is it looks as though from the first slide that we are getting $2 million less than we were expecting to get. And we know that this is an important year for us to have a balanced budget, you know, that the books balance by the end of the year. So how are we going to deal with that $2 million hole in the budget? Are we to expect what, more cuts? How are we gonna manage this $2 million hole that we've been cast into?
So first I'd say there's no such thing as a dumb question. So I appreciate the question. A few things. The state funding is lower. And that's a reality that we have. And I don't think that's going to change. So we're going to get $2 million less money from the states. Our enrollments are up. That helps a little bit. It helps. Our housing is up. That helps a little bit in terms of the finances. I think that the fiscal year 26 tool, so we're not planning at this point to come out and say, hey, we need to cut X dollars from the budget, but we are going to aggressively use our fiscal planning tool to manage at the division levels to make sure we're staying within budget. We will continue to aggressively look at position control, so really challenge divisions to, when they have vacant positions, is it a position that we need? Is it a position that we can use in a different way to deliver the services? And so we'll continue to do that. And so that's right now where we're at in terms of solving that $2 million. And I saw Dr. Freeman move, so I didn't want to.
I am also very pessimistic we'll get the $2 million. I agree with George that it's not a reason to panic given the level of our planning, but I do want to point out that there is an opportunity for advocacy from our faculty, students, and staff to the state of Illinois. The provost said that we found out over time, we found out with an hour left in the spring session that we were getting the 3% as this 1+2 construct. That was a very unwelcome and unpleasant surprise at the last minute. And I know that we do have students, faculty, and staff from other universities who are making it known to members of the General Assembly and the executive branch that while we're grateful we're not being asked to give back 4%, that we need that 2%, that our operating appropriations have not kept pace with inflation for years, and everything we get does not prevent us from falling behind further. And we need that money to make sure that our students can succeed and we can fulfill our obligations to the state. So I just wanted to put in a plug for advocacy. And while it's great to hear from us, if you have friends in business, if you have community partners that your faculty and staff work with who also see our value, it would not hurt to tell them that they could put in a plug for us. So that's my two cents.
Hello, Sahar Vahobzadeh from Mechanical Engineering Department. One of my question is along with what was asked about the 2%. Kudos to you, everyone, before anything, because of increasing enrollment that was reported. I want to know if you assume that increasing enrollment and the revenue, because I'm checking the website for that you mentioned for the budget, it seems that 40% of the revenue is coming from tuitions. Do you think that increasing enrollment that we are seeing, if it becomes sustainable, will compensate for that 2%? That is one of my questions. And the second question is that you mentioned, that information about divisions and so on can be found in the website. We do not see the information about the colleges and different units. Mm. I was wondering if it's possible to be shared with the faculty or faculty senate, because in my opinion, it is important in line with what President Freeman mentioned, that we are looking for equitable share of the resources. So the departments and colleges that they are having higher enrollment or seeing a better revenue in terms of research, grants, and funding, are they going to receive more resources from NIU or not in terms of supporting the graduate students, providing the students with better research opportunities, assistantships, and so on? Thank you.
Sure. Don't go away because I'm going to have to come back to the questions. So first question was, I'm going to paraphrase, but you tell me if I'm incorrect in my paraphrasing. Enrollments are up. What does that mean financially for us? really paraphrased. So enrollments are up. I don't want to get too ahead of ourselves. One, we've been in a deficit for more than a decade. And so it's great that the enrollment is up. It takes a tiny bit of pressure off of us, but it doesn't solve our problems. And so the 2% reduction from the state is a big bummer. That's a fancy accounting talk. That's not great. The enrollment being up helps a little bit. We're still trying to dig ourselves out of a budget that had been in a deficit. This year, our budget is balanced. We need to keep it balanced. And so is the enrollment sustainable? I hope so. But I'm not planning on it because I'm a finance guy, and finance guys tend to be fiscally conservative. And so as we think about fiscal year 27, as we think about fiscal 28, we're going to look at the demographics. We're going to look at the demographic cliff, all of those things as we're building out our budget to see what that looks like. The second part of your, oh, please.
The most important thing that I think anyone in this room can do is really to support student success and retention and re-enrollment, because the students who are here, if we can help them continue and complete their degrees, that has obviously the positive benefit for them to be able to meet their educational goals and pursue their careers. But it also has a very significant financial benefit for us as an institution. And so I just want to keep that front of mind, because that is a way that everyone in this room contributes, is the ways in which you teach and mentor and support and engage students. So I just wanted to verify that fact, which we talked about a lot last year for those of you who are on Faculty Senate, but just wanted to keep that top of mind.
And thank you, Lori. I would say that for all of us, retention is actually the biggest driver for revenues. Because unfortunately for public universities, we essentially have two sources of funding, students and the state. Those are where the money comes from, even when you dig into the details of where the revenues are. And so retention is the number one driver for tuition revenues. If we can increase retention, we actually increase revenues, and aligns with our vision and mission of serving students. Second part of your question was about how the money is allocated and all of that. I'll talk a little bit from my standpoint, but I'm gonna really hand it off to Lori for that. Again, when you're dealing with a situation where you have a deficit and you're digging yourself out of the deficit, there's not a lot of extra money to go around. And so there isn't, I wouldn't come in and say, yeah, all this extra money is gonna go. And there are a lot of programs that have few students that have high value, and we need to make sure that they have resources. There are programs that have a lot of students, but maybe have lower costs because of the type of program that they are. And so really figuring out how it is. That's why we want to do the budget exercise that we're doing, which is really to identify how we're allocating our money, why we're allocating it the way we do, so we really have a deeper understanding.
I also don't want to lose track of the, you asked a question, I think, about the website and being able to find where you can drill down to see the at the college level. It was there when I looked, and so we might want to clarify that at the end. I think Ben is clicking around, maybe can help us with that. But in thinking about how the resources then are allocated, I'm going to lean back a little bit to part of what George said when he talked about getting the list of personnel. So when we think about colleges, because your question was specifically framed around a college, looking at those faculty and making sure that they're included in the budget, looking at those key staff members that are in the college and they're included in the budget as well. And so once we do that, there's not a lot more wiggle room. And so it requires us to really think about that idea of aligning our resources with the most significant priorities. And the good news is that every single college on this campus is up in enrollment this fall, which is great news. And so it's really everyone contributed in a whole lot of ways. So it's not as easy as saying, this college or this unit is down, this one's up, and so we're going to transition those resources. Requires looking more carefully and more closely, not just at the personnel, but as George said, at the cost. What is the cost of a particular program? Are there expenses because there are clinical experiences or lab experiences or certain kinds of equipment or certain kinds of supervision? Those sorts of things come into play as well. And so the good thing is that we have a longer time frame, which is going to allow us to work closely with deans, to allow them to work closely with chairs and faculty to really really look at those core functions and really think about what they need in order to deliver on those core functions. Will we be able to fund everything? No, there's a finite amount of resources, but we really want to go through that process of making sure that the things that are most important, the things that are most impactful, the things that are most central to the work that we do at the university, and in this case, in academic affairs, that we can prioritize funding those things. So it'll be a process. But it's a real opportunity, I think, for us to make sure that we are aligning our resources in the ways that are most impactful.
Thank you. I just have one point to mention that over the past couple of 3 to 4 years, we have seen as faculties, we have seen a huge constraint when it comes to hiring our research and teaching assistants. Previously, if we were hiring a graduate assistant for 10 hours, the tuition for them was being waived for 20 hours. That has changed. And it's not only for us, it's also for students. And second of all is that previously we had the rule or law that if the total cost of a grant is less than 150K, we're not putting tuition. So we were able, with the same amount of budget, we were able to hire more research assistants. Now that rule is also not available anymore. So I think these points are very important to consider when it comes to improving the research progress of NIU. Also, those students are serving as our teaching assistants, that they are serving our undergrad students and the core values that we have. So I just wanted to mention these two in line with what President Freeman mentioned about how to improve or what are our perspectives. Thank you so much.
Thank you for that feedback. I do want to just clarify one thing, that we don't give partial tuition waivers to graduate assistants. Graduate assistants receive a full tuition waiver. That was a proposed policy a couple of years ago that did not go anywhere. And so that I just wanted to clarify that point.
Right. Okay, then I will contact you separately then. Okay. About that.
Okay. Yeah. And the comment about grants, definitely, you know, can have an opportunity to collaborate with our colleagues in RIPS, you know, as we're looking at grants and trying to figure out grants that do allow us to cover the cost of graduate assistants and their tuition. Given our university's fiscal situation, we need to take advantage of those. And so if there are exceptions to that, I think those are looked at on an individual basis. But I'm not an expert in that area. And so that may be a topic that we can consult with Richard McCarsky and members of his team to get greater clarity on that.
Thank you very
much.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for the presentation. Thank you for the engagement.
Thank you for the right presentation.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was going to mention too, if you on the website, if you click, there are expenses. It's a drop down. You have to click on the Academic Affairs Expenses by College and Units tab for this fiscal year. If you look at fiscal year 26 budget data website and then scroll down, there's a link that rolls it out. One more time. I don't have it connected right now. I just NAU.edu. I'm gonna do it. So it's not more broken out than the overall expenditures, the plan for, right? That's the expenses by college and units within academic affairs. So that includes the colleges, as well as undergraduate affairs, university libraries, support services, CITL, and so on. So those are the high level numbers for the expenses. And we have those, we can pair that with other data if we want that's available. So as you can see, it's on the NAU budget website, current fiscal year budget data, and then that drop down link. All right. So that brings us to new business, and thank you for everybody sticking with us. We have one item of new business. It's a proposed amendment to Faculty Senate bylaws, Article 4.7. I'll invite up Kelly Gross, who's the chair of UCL, to help walk us through that. As this is a first reading, There's no vote and no motions, but we'll just have a discussion. And so if Kelly, if you'd like to come up and join us and just kind of give an overview of the proposed amendment to Article 4.7.
Okay, so for those who don't know, UCL is the University Council on Initial Educator Licensure. In 2020, UCL, and there was a reorganization that happened, and UCL was reorganized under Faculty Senate. Now, this was my first year at the university, so I was not fully aware of this, and it was during COVID. But Ben came to us last year and brought to our attention that the bylaws for how UCL is structured in Faculty Senate bylaws does not align with with how UCL actually functions. And there's some important things in that we have staff representation on UCL, placement officers who work with school districts. We have instructor representation on UCL, not just tenure track people. And realistically, when UCL proposes policy, which is not policy, but you know, when we make recommendations, that our recommendations then would need to go through Faculty Senate for approval. And we've never actually operated that way. We make our recommendations to the University Office of Educational Licensure, which is headed by Antoinette Jones, and then she takes those recommendations to the provost's office, and then it becomes approved in that way. So an example of that would be our policy on substitute teaching payments during student teaching, which we do have an official policy on. So based on this, we met with Ben last year. We looked at a couple options for restructuring, and we decided that the best option would be for us to leave Faculty Senate and to become realigned under the University Office of Educational Licensure formally, where we would reinstitute our old bylaws. We're going to amend those and represent a, I don't want to say a chain of command, but a direct line from UCL to the Office of Educational Licensure to the Provost's Office. And this really is more a reflection of what is actually happening. It's not a change in what is happening currently. And so we discussed it last spring, we officially voted on it at our last meeting. It was a unanimous vote by the UCL body that we recommend removal from Faculty Senate. So is that everything you need?
That's great. I hope it's everything that these folks need. Is there any questions or comments for this action? And again, the main purpose of this is to not change anything, but except for the bylaws that were out of date and non-alignment with the core functions of the body. All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll have this back at our next Faculty Senate meeting for a second reading and then a formal vote, as it is part of the Faculty Senate bylaws. All right, that brings us to our reports from councils, boards, and standing committees. Our first report is from the Faculty Advisory Council to IVHE. I invite up Tiffany Puckett, who is our representative to the committee, to give a report.
Good afternoon, everyone. I hope everyone's doing well. Our most recent FAC meeting was hosted by Lakeland College in Mattoon, Illinois. So if you've never got a chance to go around, you can check that campus out. I didn't know they served 15 counties. The president gave a great welcome, and then it was a pretty full meeting. So I'll just give some quick highlights of some of the things, especially the IBHE highlights and updates that were provided by Valerie Lynch, the senior managing director. IBHG has new staff, new units, and a new structure. There are two new managing directors, a managing director of talent and workforce development, and a managing director of academic strategic programs, and a senior associate director of healthcare programs. There is also going to be a new director of student success. They talked about the APEER program, Academic Program Evaluation Effective Report, how it's going to now be an annual review for that for universities. Now all the programs will review annually, and there will be a rubric that will be provided to the universities for that APEER evaluation, and that they have now a hard deadline for them of March 15th to get reports back to the different schools. They are exploring reduced credit bachelor's degrees. They haven't introduced any legislation or anything like that, but there's been conversation with IBHE has had some conversation around reduced credit bachelor's programs. There is a new program that's currently called the Illinois Success Program, supporting universities and colleges in creating equitable student success. That program is a continuation of the Institutional Equity Plan. And there will be teams going around to each campus who's going to they're going to provide and involve communities of practice, podcasts, and targeted technical assistance. This is only going to apply to public universities. Also, another update in regards to the FAC, the four-year universities are having conversations around the structure of shared governance and the relationship between faculty senate, executive branches, and the unions, various unions in the schools. And so we'll be having more conversation around that at the next meeting. And I will be discussing what conversation we'll have with faculty senate Creed before I go to that meeting. I did report that Illinois is one of the five finalists, because we are proud of being finalists of the Student Success Award for APUL. And then another interesting conversation that the private school group was talking about was the disappearance of the Grad Plus loan and how that's impacting their universities. Our next meeting is going to be at Southern Illinois University on November 21st. And Carbondale. And so thank you. Anybody have any questions?
All right. Thank you for the service. All right, we have no reports from the UAC to the BOT, from the Baccalaureate Council, from Faculty Rights and Responsibilities Committee, or the Social Justice Committee, or the Rules, Governance, and Elections Committee. Nathan, do we have a report from SGA? All right, I will invite up Nathan Gonzalez, the Speaker of the Senate, to give the report from Student Government Association. Thank you.
Greetings, Faculty Senate. So far, the Student Government Association has been mostly focused on cutting our bureaucracy and our bureaucratic apparatus in order to help streamline our procedures and better connect with the students here at the university. That regarding to finances, but as well as the responsibilities and duties for senators, which will be introduced during our own Senate meeting this Friday. Additionally, President Jones and his cabinet is working on events to tap into the increased enrollment and just general student liveliness that is on this campus. And he's also a part of a text chain with other student government presidents in the state of Illinois to address other issues and concerns that the entire state is facing as well. This also is on top of my own connections with other student governments in the state and my connection with DePaul University's own student government president. In addition, something that will be introduced during this Friday Senate meeting, based on what is occurring at the federal level with the government shutdown and the United States Department of Agriculture's decision to withhold SNAP benefits beginning November 1st this month. So we'll begin introducing a resolution to redirect SGA funding to the Husky Food Pantry and what we believe to be anticipated increased demand for the pantry, as students who may be relying on those benefits will no longer have access to them. So that will be introduced and voted on this Friday.
Thank you, Nathan, and thank you to students taking that on as a potential way to support. Up next is Operating Staff Council report. Gigi, do we have a report?
Hello.
At the October meeting of the Operating Staff Council, we had guest speaker Brian Smith from Employee Wellbeing. He was there to discuss initiatives focused on staff mental health, well-being, and professional support resources. He spoke about self-preservation and emphasizing the importance of self-preservation and prioritizing personal well-being. Members discussed strategies for maintaining balance and recognizing the need to set healthy boundaries in the workplace. A discussion was held on identifying trusted individuals or channels for employees to discuss personal or professional well-being concerns. The committee highlighted the need for a safe and confidential environment for those types of discussions to take place. We also discussed training resources and access. The Employee Wellbeing Training website continues to serve as a central hub for well-being related information and resources. Actual training sessions and materials are available through the Blackboard system, where our other training and certifications are housed, and employees can register for and complete required and optional training modules. One of the things that our presidential fellow has been working on is putting professional training modules up on Blackboard. We did have one public comment that was just a shared reminder to complete the mandated ethics and compliance for cybersecurity training that is out on Blackboard. And that was the end of our meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, and I'll make sure to also share out the well-being website with this in our summary. We have no report from Supportive Professional Staff Council, so that brings us to our informational items. A through P are the usual items. You'll see our next meeting is November 19th, the Faculty Senate, and you'll also see our link to our faculty, our fall 2025 commencements, and I'll share information with that in the summary as well. With that, can I have a motion to adjourn today's meeting? Everybody wants to say, oh, thank you, Chrissy, and Novak second. All right, all in favor of adjournment today, please say aye. All right, thank you.